Okay, so very, very interesting nitziv in the beginning of Parshas Chayesara about the differences between Sarah and Avraham, and a difference or a dichotomy which I feel is very reflective or characteristic of the life of Rabbi Sacks, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, which I think a lot of people are starting to discover. People who didn't read him, didn't necessarily follow his Torah, they feel they are very touched by his passing. In retrospect, looking back at his life, touched by his writings, his life work. A lot of people in the classic Torah world aren't able necessarily to wrap their heads around that this wasn't the classic Magid Shir, Rosh Yeshiva, Posek, someone that was well-versed in the world of Halacha. And we know how to do that. We know how to mourn people of that. We know how to raise people of that stature. But what do you make of someone who came from a different place, was involved in something a little bit different, but yet people feel very touched by it? So I want to put a little perspective on that through the Nitziv's groundbreaking, really revolutionary distinction between Avram and Sarah. And he discusses in the beginning of Parshat Chayesara when Sarah dies, because there's not that much documentation of Sarah's life. If you ask yourself, what is Sarah involved in? She's in a box, of course, according to Chazal, she's in a box. She's hijacked twice, once by Paro, once by Avimelech. She's in the back of the tent. She laughs or is shocked at the prospect that she could bear children. And her only real, as we would say, initiating authorial, where she authors the events and she makes the right call and the right choice, at least we see in the Pesukim. Obviously, Chazal fill in the blanks, but in the Pesukim, we see her directing Avram Kol Asher Tomar Lecha Sarah Shema Bekola. And Chazal say that Avram was a nitval to Sarah Binavua, that Avram was secondary to Sarah Binavua, which is, again, just really shocking. It's really, it sounds almost unacceptable. Avraham had so much nevuah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sarah had very little communication with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The little communication she had, she didn't accept. She doubted. She questioned. So the one time Hashem speaks with her, she's not receptive to it, and yet she's called superior to Avraham in nevuah. So this clues into the Nitziv that there's something different about Sarah. It talks about in the beginning of Chayesara, where we hear about Sarah's life posthumously after she dies, and he'll talk about what he sees in the pasuk. But let me first describe the issue itself. And Nitziv says there really are two ways to discover HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to discover the wisdom of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's the classic way to listen to Hashem speaking. That's the function of a Navi. That's the MO of a Navi. It's when Hashem speaks with you, and obviously that's superior because you're receiving the directly revealed word of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And Avram was the quintessential Navi, he's not really the first Navi in the way that Moshe is coronated or designated as the first Navi, but certainly he speaks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and certainly he doesn't make the list of Nevi'im in the classic list of 48 Nevi'im in the Gemara, but certainly his speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the visions Hashem displays to him, the Rizbein HaBesarim, the promises, the Nevuos, Avram's the first Navi. Sarah wasn't a Navi at all. Sarah accessed HaKadosh Baruch Hu's deeper wisdoms through what the Nitziv calls Ruach HaKodesh. Ruach HaKodesh is not directly speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, according to the Nitziv, it's not speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at all. You're not listening to Hashem's direct communication. I'll read the language for you, then I'll interpret it. Ruach HaKodesh, the Nitziv writes, Hu ma she'adam misbodeid. Person meditates, contemplates, sits by themselves, we would say thinks, ponders, studies, explores. Umashra lav ruach hakodesh, and then there's some divine inspiration to allow him, through his cognitive efforts to find, or cognitive / emotional efforts, thinking is not just a cognitive exercise, it's an emotive exercise, it's a visceral existential process. The more you think, the more that you're engaged in the pursuit of knowledge, not just with your mind, but with your heart, with your essence, the more you can uncover. And Ruach HaKodesh, now I'm speaking now, enables analysis, enables discovery, enables acquiring knowledge. Amnam lo dibir mo Hashem. But the person who has Ruach HaKodesh doesn't receive the directly revealed word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Sarah was a quintessence of Ruach HaKodesh. Avraham was the paradigm of a Navi. Sarah, in contrast, didn't really receive Nevuah, she is Ruach HaKodesh. Now, there's a bit of a problem with the text, because the actual text of that Rashi I read before, the Medrash, is that Avram was Tafel to Sarah bin Avua. According to the Netziv, Sarah wasn't a Navi. She never spoke to Hashem. We don't have any record of Hashem speaking to her. She excelled in a different track, the track of Ruach HaKodesh. So that's an interesting question on the Netziv. People already discussed that question. Now, the second layer of the Netziv is why. Why did Sarah excel in Ruach HaKodesh, whereas Avram did not? Excelling in Nevuah is if HaKodesh Baruch Hu selects you. HaKodesh Baruch Hu selected Avram for prophetic information, and he didn't select Sarah. Of course, a Navi can't just be passive in receiving Hashem's word. There has to be an attempt to remove some of the barriers, whether it be physical barriers, whether it be mental barriers. The Netziv talks about this earlier in Parshas Bereishis. Take a look at that if you want to follow the trail of thought. I believe it is, let me see if I can find a few just to give you a Mara Makom. It's earlier, it's in the Pasuk of Ayedu Ki Erumim Heim. In that section, the Netziv talks about how Navi can't just passively receive the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but has to take active efforts to remove the barriers that distort, the barriers that impede. But why does Avram achieve less in the field of Ruach HaKodesh than Sarah does? So there are two elements of Sarah's life which are largely responsible for her success in Ruach HaKodesh. And these are interesting. One is because she led a very sedentary life. Avram was busy. Avram was traveling. Avram was proselytizing. Avram was interacting with people and kings and angels and generals and priests. And a very busy life. And this discovery tract of Sarah, the discovery tract which is enabled by Ruach HaKodesh, but not because you're listening to the revealed world of Hashem, takes a lot of time and contemplation and meditation. And Sarah, we see her in the Ohel, right? Typically Yaakov is Yaakov Ishtam Yoshev Ohalim. He's the person that's associated with the Ohel. But Visara Shomasvi, Sarah's in the Ohel, Pesach Ohel, so she has a quieter lifestyle. She's, I wouldn't say in the background, because we tend to view that word as pejorative, and there's nothing background about thinking about HaKadosh Hashem's wisdom and discovering it through tranquility and probing and mental contemplation. But she's not as busy as Avraham. And I'll read the language of the Netziv. Misha asako im hamon rabba, person that's involved with a lot of people, eino yachol lehisbodet kol kach. He doesn't have time to sit and think. Boy, does that resonate. Mashen kein Sarah, Haisa Yosheves Biohala, she sat in her tent, Bikidusha Vitahara. So two different profiles. Person who's busy, running around. Person who has time to think, probe, contemplate, analyze, read. Second of all, interestingly enough, Avraham had a lot of promises from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Avram's life could be defined as Havtacha from the very onset. Lech Lecha, Lech Lecha, Lech Lecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is constantly promising Avram. Really interesting, fascinating to see that theme, that repetitive theme in Avram's life. Whereas Sarah doesn't receive any promises, but she is a woman of Emunah. And it's based on a Medrash. Again, we don't really see her as a woman of Emunah. There's no moment she asserts Emunah in a striking sense. But it's a Medrash. The Medrash says, Ata, or Sarah tells Avram, Ata behavtacha v'ani be'emuna. You have your havtachos, I just believe. So Avram had havtachos. Sarah didn't know, didn't have any havtachos. There was no roadmap. Hashem didn't promise her anything. We'd call the pashat emuna. We don't really know what the future holds. You don't have a clear determination of that future. You just have pashat emuna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that, the Netziv says, that creates, and I'm elaborating a little bit on the Netziv because I think that some of these ideas are implicit, that creates an inner serenity, an inner calm, an inner ability, an inner, I'd say happiness, serenity is a better word, that could be the grounds of creative thought and the grounds of creative analysis. Creativity is predicated upon inner calm. If you're not calm inside, you can have tension and confrontation and clashes. Right? A lot of the greats of the 20th century, one could claim, was based on the culture clashes that the Rav experienced in Berlin, that Lubavitcher Rebbe experienced in university, that Rav Huttner experienced when he went to university. But internally, there's got to be a baseline of calm, serene, even-keeled equilibrium. It's hard to, I call it those who are music fans, I call it the bass guitar, no band. Every band is only as good as its bass guitar, because the bass guitar or the bass drum, whatever sets the bass, just repeats the same rhythm in and out. Ba-bum, bum-bum, 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 bum-bum. And then the creativity can play off of that. So that's to be an inner continuous calm. I know myself, when I'm not calm, when something is really tearing at me, it's very hard for me to learn, to grow, and to think. It's just, I'm just, my mind is splintered in too many places and too many elements to it. So Sarah had that inner calm. Because of that calm, she was able to think and to contemplate, and she was following a different track from Avram, which is an important statement about specialization. We live in a world of homogenization and universalization. Everyone has to be one person and one type and one style and one ashkafa and one approach. And second, a gadol story comes out. Everyone has to adopt that gadol's behavior rather than saying that behavior fit that gadol, may not fit me. First of all, because I'm not a gadol. Second of all, even if I were a gadol, even if that behavior were non-gadol oriented, there could be behavioral traits that are appropriate for one person at a certain time in their life that are not appropriate for where I'm at and what I'm involved in. And it's really hard. It takes a lot of identity and a lot of confidence and religious confidence. And I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure that we have so much of that. A lot of the conformity and everyone trying to conform to everyone else's standards. I wonder if that's based on an inner religious underconfidence, which, yeah, it doesn't make a difference what my analysis is, but if it is true, then down the line that underconfidence could create vulnerabilities. So in the language of the Netziv, Mashenkin Sarah Shaisa Chazaka Vemunasa Belishim Haftacha. And because of that, the Netziv writes, Al Kain Lonis Atzva Bechol Yameha. She had a life of calm. In Avram's life, when you have the simple Amuna, there's this baseline of simple belief that isn't altered or isn't influenced. You can tell that Avram reacts to the influences in his world, to the changes, to the vicissitudes. After the war, he's unsure about the promises, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to twice remind him, that's probably the place where Avram wonders the most, at least in the Psukim. And Sarah doesn't wonder because there's no, and I wrote about this, I wrote an article last week in some of the newspapers about whether Hashem wants us to wonder, or wants us to have a Emunah Pshita based on the Akedah, based on Parshas Vayera. So anyway, these are the two profiles. The profile of Avram, who was the Navi. The profile of Sarah, who was a person who never really spoke or never heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu's word, but was able to probe and analyze. And of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ruach HaKadosh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu enabled her to discover deeper mysteries. And the two features of her life that enabled that were the fact that she didn't have a very busy life, A, and B, her simple Amuna, and that caused a calm serenity, and that's why, getting back to the first pasuk in Chaye Sarah, that's why the word Chaye is written twice. Vayu Chaye Sarah, we all know that word. Me'ah Shana, 100, Esrim Shana, 20, Sheva Shanim, Shnei Chaye Sarah. Why does the pasuk repeat Shnei Chaye Sarah? Obviously, literally, it creates an enclosure or an inclusio. What was? So then it feels the word chayim in Tanakh means two different things. Sometimes it means life, years, actually lived, and sometimes it means happiness, contentment, serenity. So Sarah had 127 years on this earth, and they were completely tranquil and unsplintered because of her Emunah Pshuta. Anyway, what does this have to do with Rabbi Sacks? When we study Torah, when I mean Torah, especially we're engaging not just in the words of the Tanakh, but then literally deconstructing those words based on our Masorah. And one letter in the Torah can trigger hundreds and hundreds of pages of discussion in the Gemara, and thousands of secondary discussions in Rishonim and Achronim. And this is, of course, someone like myself, that's what I would like to dedicate my life to. I don't always have the time, but certainly that I feel is my calling. We're speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're listening directly to Hashem. Now, obviously, I'm interpreting, and obviously, I'm using my mind. But essentially, I'm trying to recover all those trillions of ideas that were ricocheting at Har Sinai. At Har Sinai, Hashem didn't just say words. Hashem delivered streams and streams of logic and information, and every single item was either Tameh or Tahar, 49 ways to prove that it's Tameh, 49 ways to prove that it's Tahar. in ways that the human mind can't understand because we operate in binary truths and the Kodesh Baruch Hu operates in multiple coexistent truths. So that's this endless, endless pursuit. You could spend, tell the Talmidim and Shira, I could spend my whole life on one page of Gemara and still not exhaust the deep, deep mysteries that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us at Har Sinai. How much HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us at Har Sinai? Did he tell every little detail? We created just the templates and human beings developed it. That's already a question. I've spoken about that. But we are essentially, structurally, none of us are Nevi'im, but structurally we're trying to recreate the process of Nevuah. It's a little very different, but essentially our goal is to discover the direct word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Navi does it one way, Chacham does it another way. Now, Rabbi Sachs, I'm sure, did that as well. Obviously, I don't know him that well and how much of that process he was involved in. Certainly what he's known for and his imprint and mark on the world was much more similar to the Netziv's profile of Sarah. He was not trying to discover what Hashem said at Har Sinai. I'm holding the book, The Great Partnership, which I'm trying to go through about science and religion, and I'm beginning to make my way through the book, but these are not the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu had Har Sinai largely defined. This is the logic, the morals, the ethics, the how human beings can articulate, how human beings can put terms to what Hashem's system represents in human terms. So it's not top-down. HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke at Har Sinai, and we're trying to trace that voice. It's bottom-up. Now that HaKadosh Baruch Hu delivered this system to us, what are we to make of it? Just to read to you the chapters here, just if you're not familiar with the book, you get a sense. Okay, these are the chapters. Part number one, God and the search for meaning. The meaning-seeking animal, we look for meaning. In two minds, diverging paths, finding God. Why it matters, faith and its challenges. Why religion, when religion goes wrong, why God? So I don't think HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Har Sinai spoke about these ideas, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu delivered a system and he wants us to try to personalize and humanize the system, make it have meaning in our world of thought, morality, philosophy, politics, anthropology, culture, history, science. So Rabbi Sachs was very much, at least to me, again, I'm not a student of his like some of the others were, and certainly he's not my Rebbe the way that Rav Amital and Rav Lichtenstein, and even the Rav was my Rebbe, not that I spent so much time with the Rav, but I feel like I immersed myself in his world of thought and Torah. But it seems as if that was the role that Rabbi Sachs played, and he played that role so exceptionally and eloquently, specifically because of the two reasons or the two factors in his life that parallel the two factors in Sarah's life. He didn't spend time or the same classic amount of time sitting in the benches of yeshiva, working through, you know, I'm saying this with as much caution as I can. I don't know his life. I don't know where he did or didn't learn it. Obviously, he spent time learning the Beis Medrash, but not in the same way that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein spent his whole life in the Beis Medrash working through the intricacies of a Gemara, of a Sugya. He ran a yeshiva his whole life. That's a lifestyle of Avram. I live that lifestyle in a much more microcosmic way, much more miniature fashion. But for me, it's hard to find the time to sit and think and to read. And there's a certain part of me that's deeply, deeply jealous of Rabbi Sachs and his life's accomplishment for many reasons. But I don't have the time in my life to sit and read through all the thinkers and writers and philosophers and to get that perspective and breadth. And it's not just I don't have the time, but when you enter the world of the Beis Medrash, you're entering a certain thought world, a world of thought that shapes you. And some people are more creative and some people are less creative, but it's clearly bounded by the thought of Chazal, the thought of our Masorah, the Svarim that we read. There's some degree of interpretation, obviously, but it's harder to break free. And Rabbi Sachs wasn't, I think, as affected by that world, and he had more freedom of thought, and he wasn't as, not affected, but he wasn't as shaped and tightly wound or tightly contoured by that world. So it's not just, obviously, like he's the chief rabbi of Britain, so during that period, you know, he's living the life of Avraham, not living the life of Sarah, very busy. But that the way his life is described, certainly before and after, it's much more of the Sarah lifestyle of reading, thinking, studying, probing, discussing, and not as much of the busyness that detracts from that process that Avraham was engaged in. And the second part is something I talked about earlier this week. He just, and as sophisticated a thinker as he was, as complex and as eloquent and as inspiring, he really was a person of emunah pshuta. And I'll put a link in this shir to just a shir I gave earlier this week where I just quoted 3 or 3 pages from his book. And I didn't know him well enough to be able to trace whether that led to inner contentment, inner happiness. My sense from hearing him speak online, looking at the person, body language, again, it just looks to me that there was an inner baseline of contentment that stemmed from rock solid emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that certainly came to the fore during his several medical bouts. And again, I strongly, strongly recommend you, if not listen to the shiur I gave. Again, I was just quoting a couple pages from his book. But if you have a chance, it's in the book, The Great Partnerships, beginning page 182 through page 185. Those are the two pages I read. The entire chapter seems worthwhile to read. It's 182 through 205. Anyway, I say this with not trepidation, because I think these are important ideas, but I say this with a sense of caution. Certainly the Netziv's ideas are universal. But when I read the Netziv, and I'm thinking a lot about Rabbi Sacks this week, it just seemed to me that there was a lot of parallel between the way the Netziv described Sarah and the way and what I thought Rabbi Sacks contributed to our world of Torah. Yehi Zichro Baruch.